I'm Kinley Walsh-Lawler, President and CEO of Parks California. Across California, parks are places where nature and community come together. Through Arts in California Parks, artists and culture bearers are creating murals, performances, and cultural programs with local organizations that reflect community stories and deepen our connections to these landscapes. From music in neighborhood parks to murals that celebrate heritage, these projects remind us that parks are more than just open space. They're living galleries of creativity and belonging. Learn more at parkscalifornia.org/arts.
Welcome in San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, we're celebrating Hispanic creatives, then giving you a preview of the Italian Film Festival. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. For Hispanic Heritage Month, we're profiling some of the creative people who are paving new paths in San Diego's arts and culture scene. Teatro Las Hermanas is a theater group founded by a sister duo, and they do it all from playwriting to directing and even illustrating. A big part of their focus is uplifting stories from the borderlands and underrepresented communities in our region. Joining me live are two of the group's three co-founders, playwright Mabel Reynoso and artist Zulema Reynoso. Zulema, welcome to the show, you all.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
So glad to have you all here in studio. So, okay, briefly, I'm wondering if you can tell us more about what Teatro Las Hermanas is and what your North Star is with the group. Mabel, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, thank you. So Teatro Las Hermanas is a collective of theater artists, and we are in the spirit of the Chicanx theater movement, Chicanx teatristas, who had to, once upon a time, had to do everything, right? They had to be the playwrights, they had to be the actors, they had to be the set designers, they had to be the costume designers, because no one was willing to put their stories on stage, so they had to do it themselves. They had to build their own table. And that is the ethic, our North Star, is that we are building our own table, and we are inviting our community that is historically underrepresented in the arts and very specifically in theater to amplify their stories and amplify the stories of our community.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Zulema, why did you want to create a group like this?
I think it was sort of a natural progression from the way that Mabel and I work. We are very invested in the relationships that we develop with the participants in our projects. And I think we felt that it was time to kind of organize a little more formally in such a way where we can, really highlight our practice of really connecting with the community, because it's more than just amplifying the stories, but it's really about embodying them as creatives so that we do justice to the folks whose stories we're telling, and then ultimately to return those stories and that knowledge to the communities.
Can you tell me more about the stories you're telling?
Oh, well, it's interesting because, you know, oftentimes when we are asked, what is this play about? I think people expect a single answer, but the thing that we are always guided by is this: we are multidimensional. Our communities are multidimensional, so it's not about one thing. So while a play might be billed as a story about environmental justice, it's never just about environmental justice. It's about social justice. It's about relationships. It's about seeing our community as full of so many complications and challenges and layers and joy and celebration, because the stories that we tell are not stories rooted in tragedy. They're rooted in resilience and hope and a fight for representation that is always going to, for us, always going to harken back to the happiness and joy and resilience that we will continue pushing forward.
Wow. You know, we actually featured one of the plays, Shulukwichovi, on one of our shows recently. So what about that story specifically was most compelling to you, and how did it fit into your mission?
Oh, that play is just a beautiful story. But so Zulema and I were both born in Tijuana, which is, you know, our neighbor. We say that we grew up with one foot in this country and one foot in Mexico. And the play, Shulukwatubi, is about the Tijuana River estuary, but it's also the Kumeyaay creation story. And so while we say, it's interesting because we talk about how Teatro Las Hermanas is about furthering, amplifying the stories of the borderlands, the Kumeyaay don't recognize borders, right? Mm-hmm. And so so we, as not as Kumeyaay, but as listeners, as artists who really believe in cultural humility and also doing our due diligence in telling stories of others, really sat and listened with the community, with the Kumeyaay community, to make sure that we got the story right. But it is a story that talks about environmental stewardship, that talks about the Kumeyaay creation story, and talks about the relationship of the Kumeyaay to the coastal communities.
You know, you all have so many talents, and you always find ways to combine them all. For example, the comic you drew for Shuluk finds its way into the theater. I mean, how do you combine that specific medium, you know, comics and illustrations, with theater?
So that's an interesting story, and it happened much more naturally than one realizes.
Yeah, I think the way that the comic medium came about is folks were asking for more shows or more access to the plays that were being staged. And it seemed for me, as someone who's been working with comics for decades, and I'm a teacher and I'm an educator and I've been working with comics in classrooms, I know the power of comics in terms of amplifying access to everyone, for everyone. It's multimodal, and young folks, as well, all folks of all ages, can access the messages and the stories. And so it seemed like something that would make sense, and to extend the stories to broader communities through this medium, and especially to appeal to younger audiences. I think that's one of the things that we really like to center in the way in which we tell stories, as we try to make it obviously for all ages. Mabel does a beautiful job writing scripts that appeal to all ages. But we really like to make a call to youth to kind of take up interest in these issues, and hopefully to take up action in the name of whatever the social justice story is that we're telling.
Mm. Well, it speaks to why representation is so important. You know, the first time you saw one of your plays, Mabel, was also the first time you'd seen a piece of theater that centered a Latina. So tell me, I mean, what does representation mean to you, and how are you continuing to create space for that?
So I think that's the thing that keeps me going. Theater is very hard. It's a very challenging form of art. It's very frustrating at times, but the mission that keeps me going is knowing that I am creating work. We are creating work that didn't exist when I was growing up. I didn't have exposure to theater when I was a kid. I thought that theater equaled Shakespeare, and I didn't have a connection to Shakespeare. I couldn't find my way into Shakespeare. And so when I finally got the opportunity to write a play that was about me, that centered, it was autobiographical fiction, but I put a lot of myself into it. And that was the first time that I saw Latina on stage as the main character. And there was Pancho Villa in that play. And it was produced at the Old Globe. And I was a kid when that happened, and adults were taking it seriously. That was very profound, because it wasn't just like something I was doing with my friends. It was professional level theater, which is something that was so foreign to me. I grew up watching movies. I love TV. You know, I grew up with heavy media, no theater. And so now, knowing that once you you get bit by the bug, it's like, oh, what is the power? What can this do? Theater is so powerful. It's not like movies and television, because you're experiencing it communally. So the emotional relationship that happens between what's happening on stage and the audience is very, very profound, and it should not be limited to a certain type of people. It should be for everyone. And so that is the thing that drives me. And I'm so grateful to organizations like Playwrights Project that gave me my first shot. And that's they produce my play. And they, you know, any organization that opens up theater to all communities, mm-hmm. is how what we want to model our Teatro Las Hermanas after. So.
Absolutely. Well, Zulema, what do you think?
I think, you know, just kind of going off of what Mabel was saying, is Teatro Las Hermanas is also very much about building partnerships. So Mabel mentioned Playwrights Project. We partnered with the Ayeyahun Foundation for Shiluk Wuchui, and we're looking forward to partnering with other organizations who are interested in having us, they're sharing their stories with us to create stage and comic productions from them. So, yeah, it's definitely something, again, sort of a call to broader audiences to be able to access these amazing stories, as much as it is about building the relationships, as I mentioned earlier. And those happen with the partnerships that we form with the communities in order to also tell stories that are, you know, even beyond the borderlands.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned you're both daughters of Tijuana. What role does Teatros Las Hermanas have in telling cross-border stories?
It's, for me as a storyteller, I cannot separate myself, my identity as a daughter of the borderlands. It seeps its way into everything that I do. And so I think it goes back to the roots. Like, you know, our mother would always tell us, que no se te olvide de dónde vienes, don't ever forget where you came from. And I think that is imprinted into our heart, the thing that drives us to make art. And so I think that's always centered. It's always important to think back, but I think it's inescapable for us at this point. It's just a part of our artwork. I don't know. What about you? What do you think?
We carry it with us. Yeah. Again, it's embodied in the images that I create and in what I conjure up in my head as far as, you know, how I'm going to design a set or how I'm going to draw a particular street to capture the scenic mood to complement Mabel's writing. These pictures are so embedded in our memory as well as our cultural memory that they naturally seep into our creative practice. And it's really a beautiful way to share and to, you know, amplify and make visible the spaces that folks might not otherwise be able to access.
Hmm. And Zulema, I imagine it is fun to work with your sister so closely and on so many creative projects. I mean, talk a little bit about your creative relationship. I mean, what is that like?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it started 13 months after I was born, when Mabel came into my life. We've been collaborating, I can honestly say, since then. My mom tells us stories about how I would just stare at her and somehow we would communicate non-verbally. But ultimately, it's a really harmonious relationship. Mabel is a writer, an incredible writer, and I make visible her ideas that she writes in multiple ways, right? Multimodal ways. So it's almost natural that because we grew up so closely together, we shared a room for the greater part of our lives. And so we know exactly how we can finish each other's sentences. We know exactly how the other one thinks. And there's also this really neat privilege of directness that we can have with one another. It really saves time. We're often battling very aggressive timelines and deadlines. And so to just be able to communicate directly without having to navigate kind of, you know, formal niceties that you might need to have in order to you know, model good work ethics. Not to say that Mabel is not polite, but uh-oh, she is definitely very direct. And I'm direct too. And you know, it really is about like, what do we need to do? What needs to happen? And let's just get it done.
Yeah. Mabel?
I think, yes, it's a very practical relationship. I am direct. Everybody knows that I'm very direct. I know what I want. But Zulema, because we're so close and she understands the way that I work, it's fine. It works okay. But I will give you an example of the practicality of our relationship. So we did a play last year called Somos Aire, and part of the dream for that was to do a comic book for that. And we were trying to get it ready for Comic-Con because we knew we were going to present at Comic-Con. But then there was an opportunity to present the play to the summer camp at Casa Familiar, which is a wonderful organization in San Isidro. And they have a beautiful theater where we did Somos Aire. And they also had a summer camp. And we wanted to be able to give the kids the comic book as during the performance. Now, the performance happened to be scheduled on the last day of summer camp. So we knew that if we didn't get them the comic book on that day, we were never going to see them again. And so it was the most ridiculously aggressive timeline. I think it took 36 hours.
Nonstop
for Sulema to do all of the artwork. I did the layout for it, so she would do the drawings, send the illustrations over to me email, and I was doing the layout, and it was like we went through like the multiple stages of grief,
as we were
like
grief.
and thinking like we're not going to make this deadline because you know we once it's drawn we still had to get it to the printer.
Yeah.
So we were up at 2-3 a.m. We have a picture like of each other, but we're on the phone and we're able to like you know send this over, cheer each other on, give each other tough love when we need it, but also be like also the biggest advocates for each other's work too.
That's great. Well, in the last minute that we have here, what's your hope for the group and its role in our local theater scene?
I think the hope for me is to keep telling stories, because if people don't see the humanity in everyone, then we are never going to get to where we need to be. And art is such an important way to showcase everybody's humanity.
Mm-hmm. And I would share my hope is that our communities can see themselves represented in material ways, visually, in the art that I create.
All right. I've been speaking with Teatros Las Hermanas co-founders, playwright Mabel Reynoso and artist Zulema Reynoso. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, a preview of the Italian Film Festival. KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
Welcome back to Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. We're heading into film festival season with the Italian, Filipino, International, and Asian film festivals filling cinemas in October and November. First up is the San Diego Italian Film Festival that kicks off on October 1st. To discuss the festival, we are once again gathering our Midday Movies film critics, Beth Accomando, who is KPBS's resident cinema junkie, and Yazdi Patavala, who is one of the three Movie Wallace's podcasters and critics. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Beth, this is the 19th edition of the festival, and you were there when it started. Remind us of how it began.
Sure. This all started because of a wonderful man named Victor LaRuccia, and he imagined this not just as a festival to showcase Italian films, but what he liked to call an Italian perspective. And the other thing about the festival that really comes from him, and probably from being Italian as well, is that he loved to gather people around film and food and conversation, and he envisioned it as what he called a piazza, like a place where people could gather to enjoy all these things. He loved conversation, and he was one of those people who loved to spur arguments, and he kind of took delight in like just dropping a comment that would stir a disagreement among people and But he did it in such a, like, sweet, sort of warm teddy bear sort of way. But one of the things about the festival I love is that it is a place for, like, conversation. And now the driving force behind the festival is artistic director Antonio Iannotta. And each year the festival picks a theme to kind of color the films they choose. And this year the theme is courage, with the majority of the films tackling this idea in a variety of different ways.
And Yazdi, you previewed a film rooted in history and Italian politics, Enrico Berlinguer, The Grand Ambition.
Yes, so I am by no means an expert in Italian politics. So I watched this movie as an outsider. And even so, this is a smart, earnest biopic of Enrico Berlinguer, who was an important figure in Italian politics in the 70s. And he led the politically left PCI party that almost had a third of the support from voters in Italy at that time. This is a handsomely mounted production that kind of incorporates real life footage and follows a documentary-like perspective, and kind of is a slice of life between 1973 and 1978, when Berlinguer's party tried to open dialogue with the Christian Democratic Party, which was obviously their competitors. And the intent was to form a coalition that would lead to a more liberal anti-Stalinist ideology. And over the years, Italian politics, like the politics of any country, has deviated from the left to the right. And this kind of captures a piece in time and does it beautifully as biopics go. And it does a terrific job, I think, in not just investigating his party, but also of this individual as a parent, as a husband. I think even those who don't know much about Italian politics at that time will enjoy it as a terrific documentation of what transpired during that time. And here's a clip from one of his more famous speeches.
Che quest'anno hanno avuto oltre 20 milioni di presenze.
Well, and Beth, Italian politics of the 1970s might sound off-putting to some, but should it be?
Fondati sulla solidarietà?
No. And here are the two reasons why I think it shouldn't. I know we just heard this speech where you probably didn't understand the Italian, but you understood the emotion of it. So I think the thing that's important to remember about these films is that they're compelling and engaging. And although very specific to Italy and to a specific time, they're also very universal in terms of how they tackle this year this theme of courage, and in this case, a theme of hope. This whole moment in political time for Italy was a moment of potential. And that brings up the second point, which is Antonio Iannotta is always at all the films. He generally gives you some context before the movie starts to give you some sort of either political history, social history, or just a context for the themes. And then there are always conversations after. So if you feel something may not be exactly what you're looking for, I highly recommend checking out any film at the festival because you're going to get this kind of bigger picture. And Yazdi has been part of these discussions after the films. They're really wonderful.
Yeah. Well, speaking of context, give us a little bit more context as to what we just heard in that clip.
Well, Berlinguer was this political figure who rose up at a time when there was a lot of conflict in Italy. And he was someone who had that very difficult sort of task or idea of bringing two disparate sides together. And as we know, trying to bridge gaps as we look at current American politics right now is not something that's easy. And I think part of what the film tackles is this notion of courage, of somebody kind of looking beyond just himself and just beyond his political party.
Yeah, I mean, he's credited even now for having tried to bring together this coalition, which at that time in world history would have created the largest left-leaning government anywhere in the world. And it almost happened, but it did not. But the fact that he tried and pushed through to make it happen is pretty remarkable. And, you know, even though it's said in the 70s, we realized not too far long ago, people were, a good portion of the country at that time was convinced to outlaw divorces, like things that, you know, we take for granted right now. So a lot of what we believe as being our rights, you know, were up for questioning not too long ago.
Wow. So a lot of parallels then to what we're experiencing now. Beth, you previewed a film that is also about the process of making films, the time it takes.
Yes. So this is also rooted in a true story, as with the film that Yazdi spoke about. And this is a father-daughter relationship between filmmaker Luigi Comencini and his daughter Francesca. And a lot of this film in the early part takes place on movie sets.
Silenzio, tutti in posizione, pronti a girare!
E motore, e azione!
So the story begins with Francesca as a young girl, and her father is working on an adaptation of Pinocchio. And there's a really wonderful scene in the beginning that shows their connection and just like what a conscientious father he was. She's looking through the book of Pinocchio and flips accidentally to the page of Monstro the Whale and is terrified and throws the book down. And her father comes over and kind of says, like, you know, let's look at this together so it's not so scary. And he tries to alleviate her fears by suggesting some music as they look through the book together.
Proviamo a vederlo tutto, dai, facci paura.
So the film really captures this relationship, and these early scenes are very wonderful, and he tries to impart to her kind of the, not just the magic, but also the fakery involved in making movies. And it follows their relationship into her adulthood, and she does go through some difficult times. But ultimately, it's their love of film, their love of cinema, their love of creating movies that keeps them together and keeps them both going.
Wow. Well, now you both are part of this the jury judging the Ristretto Awards. What is that?
So this is a showcase of Italian and Italian-American short films. And this has been a passion project for Antonio Iannotta and the festival. And Yazdi and I have both been fortunate enough to be part of this jury. And we get to go through the finalists and choose some winners.
All right. Well, Yazdi, what have you enjoyed about being a part of this jury for multiple years now?
I just love the sense of community that we all have. And we all have pretty strong differences in opinions, but it's always, always so polite, and it's always very congenial. And, you know, it's never, ever been remotely hostile. And I love that we as a group can come together, put our differences aside, and pick a winner. And I think, we should take pride in the fact that the jury has picked all kinds of movies for the top prize, documentaries, animated films. My favorite winner probably was way back from 2020, 5 years ago, when we picked the movie Delitto Naturale, or Natural Crime. That little short is about a girl whose best friend goes missing at school, and she goes about trying to find her. And that little short almost tips over into horror, but there's a generational understanding, and it's just put together so beautifully with wonderful pacing. And I think that one's going to stick with me for a long time.
As with Yazdi, I mean, I love the discussions we have. I mean, the jury discussions are something that Victor would just be so happy with, because we debate films. This year we had a pretty intense debate about one of the movies that we were talking about. And it's great to be able to talk and pick apart like the artistic merits, the themes, the ideas. And also, like, what will the film's impact on the audience be? And do we need to take that into account? So I really love the fact that we get to have those deep film discussions. And we also get to see amazing films. And fortunately for the audience, they can see all the finalists. And these will be at the Digital Gym Cinema. The winners will be announced at the Festa, which is the Italian Film Festival Gala. And that's on October 11th at the Museum of Photographic Arts. But I highly encourage people to go to a shorts showcase, because with multiple movies, you are always going to get very different styles and themes, and chances are you are going to find one that you fall in love with.
And that's not just true for the Italian Film Festival, but any film festival. If you're not sure, if you want to invest 2 hours of your time in a particular movie that you know very little about, it's always safe for me to go see a collection of shorts, because amongst those five or six they're going to show you, you are going to love a few of those at least.
One of the short films that we watched is unique because I think it was the only animated one this year. Mm-hmm. But it's called F2. And this hit upon the theme of courage. It hit upon the theme of courage in a way you might not expect, because it's a story set 800 years ago and it's about Frederick II. And so this short, like, it's literally less than 10 minutes long, packs in this entire history about Frederick II. And he was a controversial figure because he founded the first secular university in Europe, which was in Naples. And the short film basically was designed to celebrate this 800th anniversary. And here's a little clip from the animated film. And I think you can tell just in the voices, this is an argument that Frederick is having with a religious leader. And you can hear in the voices. And one of the cool things in the film is this is where the size of the characters change as each one kind of dominates the conversation.
Ma non esiste in terra un regno senza chiesa. E cosa credi che sia un re senza il suo avallo? Non è che un folle che sia autoincoronato, un fanatico, un idiota, un eretico, un pagano.
Invece io sono proprio un re cristiano, qui ti sbagli. E in cielo sta chi muove la mia mano, non in terra.
E dimmi allora, dov'eri tu quando la chiesa metteva in terra la sua prima pietra? Dov'eri quando in mezzo a bruti e diavoli fece valere la parola del Signore? Dov'era Federico in questa storia?
Yeah, and one may wonder at this point in time what else is left to do in animation, and this movie kind of shows that. I mean, they're not making any giant leaps in terms of the technicality of the animation, but just how cleverly, as Beth mentioned, scale is used, right? And how there's this rotating perspective as people are arguing that just adds such a kinetic feeling to what might otherwise have been a rather drab interaction. So it's really very creative.
Well, the festival sounds absolutely fascinating. I want to thank you both for this preview for the 19th annual San Diego Italian Film Festival. It kicks off October 1st at Digital Gem Cinema with a night of the Ristretto short films, and then continues through October 11th at the Museum of Photographic Arts in Balboa Park. I want to thank our midday movie critics, KPBS's Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace's podcaster Yazdi Puthavla. You can find more information about the festival and its films on Beth's Cinema Junkie blog at kpbs.org. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jade.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rachel Jans, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the San Diego Museum of Art. We're presenting a landmark exhibition of Eduardo Chiida, a visionary sculptor who transformed the way we think about form, space, and material. Eduardo Chiida, Convergence, is the most expansive U.S. presentation of the artist's work in nearly 50 years, bringing together monumental sculptures, delicate works on paper, and a virtual reality experience of his iconic Comb of the Wind installation on the Basque coast of Spain. Eduardo Chiida Convergence is on view now through February 8, 2026 at the San Diego Museum of Art in Balboa Park. Learn more at sdmaart.org.